Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. I hope everybody is having a glorious and blessed Sunday. Thank you, Sister Janelle, for posting the scripture that I was looking for, James 3:1. It says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." So if you felt called, or think you will be called, or think it's your desire to start teaching, I think you better start understanding the power that rests over top of you in doing so. That you cannot be out here just talking any kind of doctrine. You cannot use your platform after you have understood and followed righteousness to go back and think nothing is going to happen to you. When I mean going back means backsliding, dreaming up doctrines and merging doctrines of this world into scriptures and trying to make it your own thing as if you are smart and knowledgeable far beyond Yah, far beyond Yahusha. And one testimony I have about that scripture is something that happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was at the beach. This is before Shabbat. And I have a tooth implant, and it broke because I was eating dried fruit. I love dried mangoes, but I put too many of them in my mouth, and I crunched down on it and tried to pull it away, and my implant broke. So the whole day, I got a hole in my mouth. And I think to myself, or I reasoned with myself all day, should I go to the dentist on a Shabbat? Should I go to the dentist on a Shabbat? Is it that important for me to go to the dentist on a Shabbat? And my mind was like, well, David, he took from the showbread in the temple of Yahuwah because he was hungry and he was in the middle of a war or a battle. Yahusha said, shouldn't we do good on a Shabbat? So I reasoned with myself, said, you know what, let me try this. So I got up, drove down to the dentist. They made an appointment for me. I thought that it would be an easy fix, that they would just take the tooth and put it back in, screw it down, and that was it. I sit in the chair, they're like, oh, it's not going back correctly. So already my mind has been putting in fear and anxiety because I feel like, man, if it was supposed to be, if I wasn't breaking Shabbat, it would have been put back and I would have been gone about my business. So I was already nervous. So she comes back and says, you know, we got to order a new crown. I'm like, damn, a whole new crown, a whole new tooth? And she goes, yeah. And I was like, it ain't even insured. Like, I gotta pay for a whole new implant? She's like, yeah. So she came back. I was already gonna pay $1,000 just for the day. So she came back and said, oh, we'll take the difference out and we'll show you the new bill. That bill was like $3,000. So I was like, yep. I said, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. Like, I shouldn't have gotten up in the morning on a Shabbat and came down to the dentist. I already knew. So I was already stuck. So then I paid for the implant because I had to get it done anyway. So I ended up paying for the implant. I drove home. All of a sudden, my car was acting weird. The next day, my car was acting weird. The engine was overheating. I had this car for like three or four years, and this car has never overheated before. I'm talking about the temperature gauge is going all the way to red hot and going back down. It goes all the way up to red hot, it goes back down. So I took it to the auto shop that I usually take it to. He says, oh, you know, there's a leak and we have to replace the engine head. So all right, so after I go through all that, replacing the engine head and so forth, I take it back out. 2 days later, I show up to make sure everything is okay with my car. I take the car and I pick up my Ishai to pick up her car, which was at the auto shop. So we drove together to go pick up her car. As soon as I dropped her off to get her car, my engine blew up again. I'm in front of the auto shop, like, shaking my head. Like, it started rattling, smoking, making noise. And it just, he's like, yeah, now we got to replace the engine. So I was like, yep. I said, yeah, expose to me my sins of why I am going through this. Because usually, anytime there's something that's out of the ordinary in my life, I go to Yah and say, okay, show me my sins. Have me understand what sins I've committed for these events to happen in my life. And sure enough, I already knew. I knew exactly what it was. I did my own pleasure. I got up, went down to the dentist, drove down to the dentist, and my own pleasure, paid for a tooth, paid when I'm not supposed to be buying or selling. So I bought my own tooth, came back. So he struck or smote the carriage or ride that I was in. If it was like in the ancient times, he would have made my horse sick or my camel sick, and my camel would have died or something, or my horse would have died. But he struck the rider along with the ride. So these things you need to start understanding if you so choose to start teaching these scriptures, and know that it comes with a heavy price. It comes with blessings too. Don't get me wrong. It comes with blessings. But it does come with a heavy price, that you cannot be just living, or you cannot be just teaching these scriptures and not living it. And of course, we all fall and make mistakes and lean on our understanding way too much sometimes. But it's the whole part of being corrected, the whole part of being instructed, which what Paul said in Hebrews, he said, you know, if you are not partakers, you know, if you're not partakers, or maybe in Acts he said this, he said, if you're not partakers of the correction or the obedience to Yah, then you are not sons, you are bastards. So through his correction and through my obedience to him, I know for certain that I'm not a bastard, but I am a son. Now, what he has done to compensate me, because he knows this is a hard trial to go through, of getting a whole new engine in the midst of just being married, you know, trying to get his household in order and so forth, he created an opportunity for me to make money in order to pay for half of the the engine that needs to be installed. So right now I'm without a car for like 2 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks. So this is the judgment. This is the judgment that happens. But it's also grace through that judgment, because I came to him right after and said, I was wrong. I didn't let it linger. I didn't let it go for days on end and try to play games with the Most High. I said, well, I don't think I was wrong. I don't think I was wrong. I didn't play those type of games with him. I immediately pinpointed what I did differently than all the other days that I've done the Shabbat on, and this was the judgment for it. So I'm just sharing that story with you to let you know that Yah do be watching, and he does instruct you if he sees it as it's his will, knowing that you are also teaching others. Now, it's out of my understanding that some of you young ones are still confused about Shabbats and new moons. So I'm going to briefly cover what I've usually covered when I talked about the new moons in the calendar. I'm not going to go in full detail. I'm just going to give you a cliff notes of scriptures that you can look to yourself. Because it makes no difference how many scriptures I drop in front of you. You have to be the one that reads it. You can't just hear it or listen to it. You have to read it yourself. There's something in your Ruach that I don't know that needs to hear or learn certain scriptures on your own in order for you to crack open, you know, or uncircumcise the stone in your flesh or the stone in your heart or the stone in your mind. So you understand it's not coming from me, it's coming from Yah. So that's why I encourage you to read the scriptures and not just listen to me give them to you. So I've come to the understanding that you young ones are doing Friday and Saturday Shabbats, or just Saturday Shabbats, which is not biblical. If you're doing your Shabbats on Friday and Saturday, or on Saturday. That means you must be in the solar calendar and you must be in your must, excuse me, your feast days must be out of order and you don't have any new moons, which is talked about multiple times in scripture. So we'll start from the beginning. Jubilees 2, it says, on the fourth day he created the sun and the moon and the stars and set them in the expanse of the heaven to give light upon all the earth and to rule over the day and the night and divide the light from the darkness. And Elohim appointed the sun to be a great sign on the earth for days and for Shabbats and for months and for feasts and for years and for Shabbats of years and for Jubilees and for all seasons of the years. Now, people get stuck on this. Oh, it's on Friday, Saturday, because he made it on the fourth day. So people say, okay, if it's on the fourth day, we do the 7 days of creation. So the fourth day he made it, then the five and the six and the seventh day he rested. And then, you know, the evening, he rested on the evening. And then is the Shabbat is from sunset to sunset. But it says right there that he appointed the sun to be a great sign on the earth for days and for Shabbats. So if your Shabbat starts in the evening, that's not necessarily making the Shabbat for days. It's not a sign or a great sign on the earth for days for the Shabbats then. He would have said, well, I made the moon for Shabbats. Because if you're starting your Shabbats in the evening, that's nighttime. That's when the sun has already gone down. That's not a sign. The moon is the sign if you're doing Friday evening Shabbats to Saturday evenings. But if you're doing Shabbats when the day rises in the morning, that's the sunrise. That's when the Shabbat starts. So it should be sunrise to sunset. Didn't Yahushua say it'd be only 12 hours in a day, not 24 hours? And Shabbats were for gathering or a holy assembly. So waking up on the day of a Shabbat to have a holy assembly makes more sense rather than waiting for the dark time and then trying to have a holy assembly in the dark. Especially when Yahushua said that we are not children of the dark, we are children of the light, and we shall walk therein. So he was automatically separating us from what the Yehudim would practice or what the proselytes would practice. Now for the new moon, it says Enoch 78:13, all the time that the moon is in progress with its light is poured in the presence of the sun until the light is in 14 days completed in heaven. This is the midpoint. He's talking about the midpoint right now, where if you see a full moon, guarantee you it's on the 14th and the 15th day. The time that they had a 364-day calendar, the months were 30 days apiece. Regardless if the sun went down 28 days, I mean the moon went down 28 days or 29 days, it was 30 days in a month. So the middle of the month would be 15, the full moon would be 15 days. But its light is completed between those periods of 14 and 15. And it says, Sirach. So when he says in the new moon on Enoch 78, he says, when it is wholly extinguished, its light is consumed in heaven. And on the first day it is called the new moon, for on that day light is received into it. I repeat. And when it is wholly extinguished, its light is consumed in heaven. And on the first day, it is called the new moon, for on that day, light is received into it. Now, this contradicts the translation of Psalms 81:3, because that says, blow the shofar on a dark new moon. It says, blow the shofar on a dark new moon. In other translations in Psalms 81:3, it says, blow the shofar on the moon, new moon, and at the full moon, the day of our solemn feasts. That's what it says. So I'm going with the translation, not the Seyfert translation of the Dark New Moon. I'm going with the other translations that I found, because that would make Enoch 78 verse 14 correct. Because it's when it's wholly extinguished, when it's completely dark, it has no light. It is consumed in heaven, and on the first day, it is called the new moon. So the first day, if you are doing Saturday Shabbats and you're doing it for the seventh day, you don't have a new moon. You just have a solar calendar. You're not going by the new moon. And people get in this argument about solar and lunar, solar and lunar. But I'm reading the scriptures here in Enoch 78. That's what he said. At the end of the day, this is the formula, or this is the hard line doctrine of what a new moon is. It don't say anything about its translation being from new month to whatever you want to call it. It says this is what the new moon is. So if this is the first day, then all you do is count 6 days afterward, and that will get you to your Shabbat. It will seem like the Shabbats move every month only because we are in a Gregorian calendar and it's not a natural calendar. The calendar is but 500 years old. The Gregorian calendar is not ancient. It's 500 some years old. So the reason why it seems strange to you that the Shabbats move around is because we are stuck on the Gregorian. We grew up on the Gregorian. If we came into Yah's calendar first, and then we were thrown into the Gregorian calendar, we would be at odds of why we needed to follow the Gregorian calendar. We would see how chaotic the Gregorian calendar is because it moves around. The reason why we are reversing that and saying that the Shabbats move around is because we grew up in the Gregorian calendar. Sirach 43:7. From the moon is the sign of feasts, a light that decreases in her perfection. From the moon is the sign of feasts, a light that decreases in her perfection. What is her perfected state? It is a full moon. If you go to the major feasts of Yahuwah, if you go to Passover, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, those three main feasts are in the middle of the month, which is on the 14th and the 15th day. That is when the moon is full or at its perfected state. If you are doing Saturday Shabbats or Friday and Saturday Shabbats, and you are categorizing your feast days based around the Gregorian of the Friday and Saturday Shabbats, I guarantee you, when you look up at the moon, that moon is all over the place from Pesach to Shavuot to Sukkot. And that cannot be so. If these moons are supposed to be in their perfected state and their full moon state, that means all those three feast days should be in the same moon, or should be in the same phase of the moon. If you are not, if you've gone through this trial and you looked up at the moon at your nearest feast day, and that moon isn't full, and that moon is either waning or waxing, you are in the wrong. I'm sorry, you are in the wrong. And I'm giving you the scriptures that say that. From the moon is the sign of feasts, a light that decreases in her perfection. If it's starting to decrease, it goes back to Enoch 78:13. All the time that the moon is in progress with its light, it's poured in the presence of the sun until light is in 14 days completed. That means it's full. If the moon is decreasing in her perfection, that means it's coming from a full moon down to the new moon again, down to when the moon is dark, which is in the middle of the month. Sirach 43:8. The month is called after her name, increasing wonderfully in her changing, being an instrument of the armies above, shining in the expanse of heaven. The month is called after her name. What is the month called? New moon. If she's increasing wonderfully in her changing, that means light is being poured into her, which again backs up Enoch 78:14. Because on the first day, it is called the new moon, for on that day, light is received into it. If the moon is increasing wonderfully in her changing, she's changing into a full moon. So this whole argument of, oh, the sea for this and the sea for that and Ethiopian scriptures this, Ethiopian scriptures that, yeah, that's all well and good to make sure we have factual and correct translations. But at the end of the day, this is about serving the Most High in his ordinances. That's what it's about. It's not a scholarly review of who translated what wrong and translated what right. They're all going to be mistranslations in these scriptures. But the important part is the important, what they say is the meat. The meat of the matter is, how are we serving or how do we need to serve the Most High? Now, the reason why we're on a shortened calendar is because of Enoch 80. Again, Enoch 83. In the days of sinners, the years shall be shortened. Enoch 86, 80, verse 6. The moon shall change its laws and not be seen at its proper period. But in those days shall heaven be seen, and barrenness shall take place in the borders of the great chariots in the west. It shall shine more than the orders of light, while many chiefs among the stars of authority shall err, perverting their ways and works. In the days of sinners, the years shall be shortened. So let's go to Jubilee 6, verse 36. There will be those who will surely make observations of the moon, how it disturbs the seasons and comes in from year to year, 10 days too soon. 10 days too soon. This backs up Enoch 80, verse 3. In the days of sinners, the years shall be shortened. If I go to another witness, I'll go to 2 Baruch, chapter 20, verse 1. Therefore, behold, the days come, and the time shall hasten more than the former, and the seasons shall speed on more than those that are past, and the years shall pass more quickly than the present years. This is the Most High speeding up time. And his son talked about also time being sped up. Matthew, chapter 24, verses 20 through 22. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Shabbat. For then shall be great tribulation such as has not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So again, we're in a shortened calendar. And the only way that you can get 364 days out of this calendar, if you completely ignore all of the new moon feast days and the new moon Shabbats. That's the only way you can make a 364 day calendar work. If you ignore the fact that the laws of the moon were changed and the fact that the years were sped up, you would have to rearrange the entire calendar. And you again would end up on Friday and Saturday Shabbats again. So you would lose the feast days because of the new moon phase, because of the moon phases. You would lose the new moon Shabbats and the new moon feast days, even the days of remembrance. Even in the days of remembrance that's mentioned in Jubilees, in the first six chapters of Jubilees, where the days of remembrance were based on the new moon. The first, the fourth, the seventh, the tenth. You're losing major feast days along with those days of remembrance just to follow 364 days. But Yah saw this coming. Jubilees 1, 15. And they will forget all my Torah and all my commandments and all my judgments, and will go astray as to new moons and Shabbats and feasts and jubilees and ordinances. Now, one of his ordinances is in Numbers 10. Numbers chapter 10, verse 10. Also in the day of your gladness and in your solemn days and in the beginnings of your months, ye shall blow with the trumpets over your ascending smoke offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before your Elohim. I am Yahuwah El Hakim. A memorial. That means forever. That means what you do or you don't do is remembered forever. So me being a teacher, or I'm not even saying myself as a teacher, but being called to teach scripture, I have to do these feast days because these ordinances are forever. Now, it's up to you if you feel like you need to follow or don't follow, but I'm just telling you what these ordinances are. He says that they will forget. Now we are being put in remembrance of his new moons, Shabbats, and feasts, and jubilees, and ordinances. Shouldn't we do them? Even Paul said, let no man therefore judge you in meat, or in drink, or in respect of a feast day, or of the new moon, or of the Shabbats, which are a shadow of things to come for the body of Mashiach. Are we not in the body of Mashiach? Does a body not cast a shadow? Does the shadow not follow the body? Should we not follow Yahusha? Should we not follow these ordinances? Should we not follow these statutes? So shouldn't we not do new moons? Should we not be doing new moon ascending smoke offerings and sacrifices? Should we not be doing these things? Now, it's on you to read the scriptures for yourself and ask Yah, when and how can you do these ordinances and these statutes? But they are ordinances and statutes for a reason. Because once you pay attention to the new moon for the first day of the month, then it's pretty much easy to order out your entire week based on that calendar. Because the Shabbat is going to move every month. It could be Wednesday. It could be Friday. It could be Saturday. It'll move. So it's not meant to make you comfortable by choosing a calendar that works best for your work week or best for your family's activities. It's supposed to be making you uncomfortable because this is not our system. This is not our land. This is not our calendar. So we should be making ourselves uncomfortable for Yah's sake and watch him move us in a position to where we can observe his ordinances and his statutes under his blessings. And I said this to a brother that I had. Oh, you will hear his testimony on this show when I post his episode. But we talked about that if Yah sees in your heart, in your mind, in your soul, that you're trying to serve him with all you got, he will put you in a position to make it easier for you to observe his ordinances and statutes. Not based on, oh, you having financial troubles, let me give you a job and so you can be compensated for your financial loss. Like, oh, you know, this has happened to you, so let me put you, no. It's based on how you worship and praise Yah and how you are faithful to him. And he will put you in a position where you can be exalted through worshiping him and worshiping him only, having faith and trust in him only. So let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a feast day or of the new moon or of the Shabbats. Now, mind you, he's talking to people who are not of the children of Yasharel. Not totally. He's talking to those who are just learning, just as you are learning about these ordinances and statutes. So he must have been around, or they must have been around, his listeners, his followers, listening to, must have heard that people were griping and groaning, like, why are you doing this? You're not the children of Yasharel. Why do you need to do a new moon? Why are you doing this? Why aren't you coming outside? Why are you respecting the new moon? This is not our culture. This is not what we do. He's talking to people who are alien to our ways. So if he has to say this, that means people were groaning and griping at each other about what to respect as far as the ordinances and statutes that your children of Yasharel observed. Just as I am telling you that you should observe these statutes and these ordinances. I can go right to Matthew 5, verses 17 through 19. Think not that I come to destroy the Torah or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Now, this is where Christians get this all twisted up. They think fulfill means it's done away with. But in the whole book of John, it talks about guarding the commandments. You don't know Yahushua, you don't know the Father if you do not guard these commandments. But Christians here, think not I come to destroy the Torah or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And they run with that. And I didn't understand it until my Ishai, my wife, brought to my attention that Philip Anthony Mitchell's sermons are done mostly out of the book of Mattityahu. She pulled up his YouTube page, and she was just going through it. And if you go through it yourself on his page, he does a lot of teaching on just the book of Matthew. Nothing else. No precepts, no line upon line, just Matthew. So I can see why a lot of Christians are brainwashed with just only the small parts of the New Testament and not the bigger picture. For amen, I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass away, one yard or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the Torah till all be fulfilled. Is heaven and earth passed away? No, it is not. Have all things been fulfilled? I'm talking about all the way down to judgment. Has everything been fulfilled? No, it has not. So not one yard or one tittle. New moons and the new moons ascending of smoke offerings, which is said to be passed down from generation to generation forever as a memorial unto us, that is not passed away. That is the yod. That is the tittle. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. I'm trying to be great in the kingdom of heaven. I'm not trying to be so-so, half-assed, or least in the kingdom of heaven. So I'm teaching you and telling you that you should, at the end of the day, do these new moon ascending smoke offerings and rearrange or reorganize your calendar to fit new moons. It is very easy to do so. You look up at the moon and be like, okay, you count. From 29, you count 29, 30, 29, 30, 29, 30. And that is easily done to know what, like, know the months. To start off knowing that the months come in 29, 30, 29, 30. That's how I've been counting for the last 2 or 3 years. That the moons have been 29, 30, 29, 30, just to get us to 354 days. That's what I've learned. You do it the way you... the scriptures say do it, and then you'll find or you'll come to the same conclusion. Now, when it comes to new moons and Shabbats, they are mentioned closely together, as Yahuwah has even mentioned them close together. So new moons are supposed to be your Shabbats as well. It makes sense. It makes sense to stop in the first of the month so you know that it's the first of the month. He did this as a backstop so we don't have a run-on calendar. So people who are in a Friday or Friday-Saturday Shabbat or even a Saturday Shabbat, it's a run-on calendar. You don't have a seventh day. So your seventh day is based on a Gregorian calendar, which starts, it doesn't matter where it starts. Like the first day of the month could be on a Wednesday, but you're still doing a Friday-Saturday Shabbat. You see how weird that is? The first of the month could be on a Tuesday. Or matter of fact, the first of the month could be on a Friday itself, but you're still doing a seventh day rest on the Saturday when it's actually the second day of the month. You have a run-on calendar. Like, it doesn't make sense. What are you basing the first day of the month on, or the first day of the month, If your seventh day is always on a Friday, Saturday? Makes no sense. So that's why the new moon is important. Because then you teach, the new moon Shabbats are important because you make yourself stop. Like, okay, boom, we're about to start again. We're about to start a whole new month. This is the new moon. Now I can count my 6 days. It'll bring me to my Shabbat for the month. That's why at the end of the month, the last Shabbat of the month is like a grace period to get you ready for the beginning of the next month. So it's always a day or day and a half in between the last Shabbat and the new moon. So when you have those Shabbats in the same week, not a back-to-back Shabbat, but in the two Shabbats in the same week, is telling you, oh, okay, now we're getting ready to start this new month. So Amos 8:5 says, Amos 8, verse 5, saying, when will the new moon be gone, that when we may sell grain, and the Shabbat, that we may set forth wheat? When will the new moon be gone, that we may sell grain, and the Shabbat, that we may set forth wheat? So the new moon is almost the same as the Shabbat, because they can't sell grain on the on a new moon, just as like we can't buy and sell on a Shabbat. Are you with me? Amos 8, verse 5, saying, when will the new moon be gone, that we may sell grain, and the Shabbat, that we may set forth wheat? Because obviously they're going to set forth wheat after the Shabbat to sell it. So you can't buy and sell on new moons, just like you can't buy and sell on the Shabbat. So again, you're missing these ordinances and statutes because you're trying to follow a solar calendar or a calendar that is comfortable with your work schedule, and you're making the Shabbats on Saturday, and you're forgetting the new moon. Yeshayahu, or Isaiah 66, verses 22 and 23. For as the renewed heavens and the renewed earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, says Yahuwah, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from new moon to his new moon, and from Shabbat to his Shabbat, shall all flesh come to worship before me, says Yahuwah. So you will come in the same statutes and ordinances that he has called us, his children, to observe. So regardless if you do them now, you're going to end up doing them later. So you might as well learn how to do it now for later. Because maybe the purging process is who is going to understand my statutes and my ordinances and the narrow path in order for me to choose them, to purge them as the one-third and try them as gold is tried in the furnace. Even says in scripture, he will remove the rebels from among us, just as he removed the rebels in the days of the 40 years in the wilderness, that he removed those who talk horrible about the land that he told them to go scout. Those who didn't want to follow his laws, his commandments along the way into the wilderness to purge them from all the idolatry and doctrines from Egypt, he had to remove them. And he wanted to completely destroy the people because they didn't want to let Egypt go, or that slave mind go. They were going through Stockholm Syndrome. This is how many of you went through Stockholm Syndrome when it comes into this walk and coming into this word. Because you came into it from a religious standpoint, from a religious doctrine. You know different from what the Israelites did in Egypt. How they didn't want to do anything because it was foreign ways to them. They had forgotten who they were. They had forgotten their true ways that the patriarchs lived. So they're coming into, well, we did all this loosey-goosey stuff in Egypt. Now he's telling us that we can't do this stuff and nothing has happened to us. Now he wants us to do this. And now he has to punish us by the wayside into the wilderness in order for us to understand his ways. And we were stiff-necked and stubborn then, just as we are stiff-necked and stubborn today. So when people bring up new moons and all this, they try their hardest to talk themselves out of it or translate scriptures in their own mind and say, no, we don't need to do this, or this not what it really means. I'm telling you, with all those scriptures that I just told you, to read them for yourself and come to that understanding. Because obviously, if you go by Old Testament, New Testament, Apocrypha, books are taken out, they all say the same thing. They always categorize new moons along with Shabbats and show of what importance the new moons are from month to month, even the days of remembrance. This also is a trial to some of us. Just like Abraham went on his trials. Now, it's not mentioned the 10 trials of Abraham. It's only mentioned for some reason in Jubilees that Abraham went through his 10th trial when it concerned where he was going to bury Sarah and the prophecy that the Most High told Abraham about having the land that he was going to have that he was going to have for his generations forever, that he actually had, that he still paid the children of Seth for the cave to bury Sarah in. And his trial was to be of a patient ruach and not telling or disturbing the prophecy that Yah told him about that land. And that it's only mentioned in Jubilees that this was the 10th trial. Now, I searched Sefer and looked up, try to find it through the first trial, the second trial of Abraham. It was not mentioned. I had to go to Eliezer the Great, translated by Gerald Friedlander. I mean, that you take that book with a bunch of salt, but they have in it the 10 trials of Abraham. So the first one was Abraham survived when the magicians sought to kill him because there was a sign that said he was going to conquer these four kings. And one of those four kings were, or his generation or his seed will conquer the four kings. And one of it was Nimrod's empire. The second one was he was put in prison for 10 years and he still trusted in Yah. The third is leaving his homeland in search of a land that he knows not. That was the third trial. The fourth trial is the famine and going into Egypt. And now this is the one of the trials I wanted to talk about is when his wife was taken, not once, but she was taken twice. And this is also a doctrine or understanding that most Christians don't have. When the preachers and pastors talk about this prosperity gospel, they leave out important facts because they go, well, Abraham was rich. They all say this. Abraham was rich. He was given wealth. So God wants us to prosper. God wants us to be prosperous because he allowed Abraham to have such wealth. And they don't understand and don't go into how Abraham got this wealth. And he got this wealth through being faithful, by being encouraged by Yah, and also his woman, which is not talked about much. His woman was faithful to Abraham. So you can find the story in Jasher 15. When the famine broke out, Abraham went into Egypt, which is, like I said, Yah has his timetable when things keep reoccurring to get you to understand his power. Just as when in the days of Yasharel or Yaakov, there was a famine in the land of Canaan, and they had to what? Go down into Egypt, and that's how they came to be in the land of Goshen. So this is Yah setting up Abraham so we can have an expected end. I don't understand why we didn't understand this, but this is how Yah works. He's not going to just do anything out of the blue and not have us understand why he did it. So he sent a famine in the land of Canaan where Abraham was. So he had to go down into Mizraim. And because he feared at the time, the mindset of the Egyptians were, if they seen a woman they want, they would take them. They would take her and lay with her, either by rape, by force, by whatever, or beguiling her or sweet talking her, using their mouthpiece or what have you. They would just take the woman they wanted. So he told Sarah, do not tell them I'm your man or you're my woman. Tell them you're my sister, which is true. Sarah was Abraham's half-sister, so it wasn't like they were lying. So he told his servants this when they went down into Egypt. And he didn't even believe that they would keep their mouths shut. He didn't even trust in the words that he told his servants. Like, hey, if anybody asks you who this woman is, just tell them that this is my sister. So he hit her in the chest. And of course, the guardsmen, before letting them into the city of Egypt, they wanted the basket opened. And they opened and they saw how beautiful Sarah was. So much so that they ran and told the Pharaoh, like, yo, you got to come see this woman. This woman is beautiful. So, of course, they come down there, and this is where we start the story in Jasher 15, verse 22. And the king said, it is incumbent upon us to make him great, Abraham, to elevate him, and to do unto him all the good which you shall command us. And at the time, the king sent to Abraham silver and gold and precious stones and abundance, together with the cattle, men servants and maid servants. And the king ordered Abraham to be brought. And he sat in the court of the king's house, and the king greatly exalted Abraham on that night. And the king approached to speak to Sarah, and he reached out his hand to touch her, when the angel smote him heavily, and he was terrified, and he refrained from reaching to her. And when the king came near to Sarah, the angel smote him to the ground and acted thus to him the whole night, and the king was terrified. And the angel on that night smote heavily all the servants of the king and his whole household on account of Sarah. And there was a great lamentation that night amongst the people of Pharaoh's house. And Pharaoh, seeing the evil that befell him, he said, "Surely on account of this woman has this thing happened to me." And he removed himself at some distance from her and spoke pleasing words to her. And the king said to Sarah, "Tell me, I pray you, concerning the man with whom you came here with." And Sarah said, "This man is my man. And I said to you that he was my brother, for I was afraid lest you should put him to death through wickedness." And the king kept away from Sarah, and the plagues of the angel of Yahuwah ceased from him and his household. And Pharaoh knew that he was smitten on account of Sarah, and the king was greatly astonished at this. This also sets up how we, Jerusalem or Yisrael, are symbolically treated as a woman. When the Most High says that we have been playing a harlot, or we played whore, going after other gods and other nations' gods, when we get into whoredom, we are looked at as a woman. Yahusha is looked at as a bridegroom. So we are the women. We are the body of Yahusha, the body of Yisrael, the grafted in, the Gentiles, the called out assembly Gentiles. We are looked at as women, as a nation, symbolically, because we're waiting for the bridegroom. We're at the altar waiting for our groom. This is also Yahuwah setting up the nation of Yisrael, because Pharaoh took us and wanted to take us into bondage. And we went through bondage, just like Sarah didn't go through bondage, but she was taken by the Egyptian, taken by the king's power. And he wanted to do whatever he wanted to do with us. But he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do with Sarah. So he caused plagues. Maybe not 10 plagues, but he caused plagues as a sign that you cannot take this woman that belongs to my servant, nor his generation after him, nor his seed forever after him. So I'm going to cause plagues again for it to come into remembrance, not only your mind, but your whole household, your bloodline's line, and even Egypt's minds, that if you touch these children, I'm going to smite you. It's the same for us today. This is, again, why he called America the second Egypt. Because these plagues will be running amok on this nation because of what this nation has done to the children of Yisrael. I don't know why people get into this black, white, fake race war going on right now. Just sit back and laugh. Sit back, get your popcorn, because judgment is going to happen. The Most High has not lied to us yet and will never lie to us about his prophecy or his judgments. But this is why he gives us these stories. A lot of people, I'll take a break in the story real quick. A lot of people say, people who don't understand Yah, don't understand the Bible, or pretty much atheists, they say, why didn't Yah just didn't destroy Satan from the get-go? How would we know that Yah was faithful and true and righteous in all of his judgments and his word and his works if he just destroyed Satan? Because if Satan was just destroyed, we would still be making up other gods and other things. We still wouldn't be paying attention to the Yah's glory. We would come into our own glory. Eventually, we would come into that. People complain, "Oh, why didn't he just didn't destroy Satan then? Why punish us? Why didn't he just destroy Satan?" We don't really have free will. Like, we have free will, but our free will comes with a price. He gave us the gift of free will for us to choose to be blessed and covered rather than to be destroyed and wicked. And we chose, even without him saying, you know, doing anything, we chose to be wicked. We didn't come into this world knowing manners. We came into this world having to be taught manners, taught to say please, taught to say thank you, taught to share. We weren't taught to be disobedient. We weren't taught to kill and murder and unalive people. That's just something we came into this world as. So the fact that your parents and our parents had to teach us to have manners, obviously we didn't know. So our free will is to choose for ourselves what we choose to do with the knowledge that we are given. But the Most High sets all of this up for us to understand his power and understand his word, understand that things that must happen are all based on our free will. He's just correcting what we don't have the knowledge to correct for ourselves. He's given us the free will, but he's also correcting the lack of understanding that comes, or the lack of knowledge that comes from our free will of why we do the things that we do, or why we do the things that we shouldn't be doing. And I'll pick up from Jasher 15:26. And Pharaoh, seeing the evil that befell him, said, surely on account of this woman that has this thing happened to me. And he removed himself at some distance from her and spoke pleasing words to her. So separating himself, knowing that he cannot just do and say whatever he wanted to this woman because she was covered. And this also is a respects for Sarah, too. Like, kudos or hats off to Sarah as well. Because Sarah could have easily saw the house of Pharaoh and said, you know what? I'm leaving this man. I'm seeing that this man has the entire kingdom of Egypt. And I'm with a man who has had me in the wilderness all these years. I'm talking a long period of years. She was with him for a while. And she's been bouncing around from wilderness to wilderness, city to city, location to location. And she has not ever in her life seen a kingdom built a kingdom built the way it's built until she came into the house of Pharaoh. Like, she was young when Nimrod was ruling, but after that she left and fled. They went to a land of wilderness, the land of Canaan. So she didn't see these mighty pyramids. She didn't see these mighty buildings being built until she reached Egypt. So she could easily say, man, this dude got it paid. He got it laid. He got money. He got servants. He got the kingdom. I could leave Abraham right now. But it was only her faithfulness to Abraham and Abraham's faithful to Yah that kept her in line. So it must have been a thing where Abraham was covering her amazingly for her to not even second guess Abraham's leadership or Abraham's calling on his life. That's where you want to put yourself as a man. If you're trying to get a household, you're trying to get a wife, you need to learn and understand the trials of Abraham. Because once you are successful through those trials, your woman ain't going nowhere. If you can't be strong in these trials, you are going to have a woman that's going to be flaky, going to be double-minded, going to be the weaker vessel, and not going to be a blessing to you, but a stumbling block to you. So that's why most of you are so in a hurry to get a wife or get your household. You better think twice. You better make sure that you are stable. You better make sure you are surviving and being approved of the trials that are in your life for you to get your household, because those trials are going to come with or without a woman. Now, Pharaoh says in 30, verse 30, now therefore, here is your woman, take her and go from our land, lest we all die on her account. And Pharaoh took more cattle, men servants and maid servants and silver and gold to give to Abraham. And he returned unto him Sarah, his woman. And the king took a maiden whom he begot by his concubines, and he gave her to Sarah for a handmaid. This is Hagar. Hagar is a daughter of the king or the pharaoh of Egypt that he had with a side chick or a concubine. If you understand the Italian, his guma. And he gave her to Sarah for a handmaid. And the king said to his daughter, "It is better for you, my daughter, to be a handmaid in this man's house than to be a mistress in my house, after we have beheld the evil that befell us on account of this woman." So this is the king or the pharaoh giving Abraham royalty of his royal bloodline to be a servant, to be a handmaid for Abraham. And we know that Abraham laid with Hagar and had Ishmael. So this is where this great nation came from out of, or the Arab came from out of, the seed of Ishmael, which is the concubine of the king of Egypt. But this is Abraham, again, amassing wealth and coming out of Egypt. Again, setting up the story that when the Israelites left out of Egypt through plagues, through the destroying of Pharaoh's house, that they left out with abundance. Again, it goes back up to Genesis 15, 13, and 14, where the Most High said he will judge this nation that which we served and were afflicted 400 years in. We will come out with great substance. So our father Abraham left out with great substance, with prosperity, because he was faithful, and they both prayed in order for Sarah to be returned unto him. Then you go to Moshe, praying to the Most High that we learn to leave Egypt and leave everything behind, and we leave out of our great abundance. We transgressed the Torah. We went back on the commandments and the oath that we made under Mount Sinai generations later. Then we're sent to America, and we have to go through this affliction, and now we're getting ready to come out in our second Exodus, and we're going to come away with abundance and prosperity. So it's a bloodline thing that we are going through. Not for Christian pastors to say, okay, Abraham was rich and this is why he had prosperity, so God wants us to be prosperous because he's a friend of God, and we should all learn to be, you know, we should all want to be rich like Abraham, and not understanding this is the story comes from somewhere and it's attached to a bloodline. Bless those who bless us, curse those who curse us. That is a generational blessing and curse for our bloodline. Not for the doctrine of Christianity, for the Abrahamic religions. Now, there was another trial, which is almost the same exact trial, when it came to Sarah. Now, Sarah goes, Sarah goes to another kingdom. I think the king of the Philistines, his name was Abimelech, or Abimelech. And again, he saw how beautiful Sarah was. You can find that story in Jasher 20, verse 7, I'll start. And he approached her and said to her, "What is that man to you with whom you did come to our land?" And Sarah answered and said, "He is my brother, and we came from the land of Canaan to dwell wherever we could find a place." And Abimelech said to Sarah, "Behold, my land is before you. Place your brother in any part of this land that pleases you, and it will be our duty to exalt and elevate him above all the people of the land, since he is your brother." And he dreamed, I'm going to skip down to 13, and he dreamed that an angel of Yahuwah came to him with a drawn sword in his hand, and the angel stood over Abimelech and wished to slay him with the sword. And the king was terrified in his dream and said to the angel, "And what have I sinned against you that you come to slay me with your sword?" And the angel answered and said to Abimelech, "Behold, you die on account of the woman which you did yesternight bring to your house, for she is a married woman, the woman of Abraham, who came to your house. Now, therefore, return that man his woman, for she is his woman, and should you not return her, know that you will surely die, you and all belonging to you." And on that night, there was a great outcry in the land of the Philistines, and the inhabitants of the land saw the figure of a man standing with a drawn sword in his hand, and he smote the inhabitants of the land with the sword, yet he continued to smite them. So imagine you are a king or a foreign king to Abraham, and you tell this man, here, for your woman, I'll give you this land. I'll give you all all that you see. I'll exalt you. And the whole time you are understanding that Yah has given you this entire land that these people are giving over to you, which you are already prophesied to have. So how do you think the lands were going to be given to Abraham if Abraham wasn't put in front or put in presence of these kings to understand Yah's power? This is what I'm saying when I talked about in the last couple of episodes about when Yahusha had the parable of make sure you're a friend to people who are in love with money, or people who are not wicked or sinful, but people who love money, and watch how they change and do things in order to benefit you. That the Most High, if he wants to endow you with resources and abundance, he would have to take it or spoil it from somebody who is wicked. This is why the wicked aren't just plucked out of here as soon as they are wicked, because they hold themselves the resources in abundance they've gotten either through fault or got through greed or got through some unnatural means. It's allowed for that, for them to go through that, allow for them to have that. So when it's time for judgment, it falls into your lap, and it falls into your lap at the right time, because when the time that you are in the world and you came out of the world and now you are walking in righteousness, now your righteousness compared to their unrighteousness is fit for them to be spoiled. Now you are at a place to catch their blessings, because the time of them being wicked and them changing not to be wicked into being righteous, they're hoarding up the abundance and resources that you need. So it says the time of catastrophe or a catastrophic event happens where you need resources and you've been praying to Yah, you'll be right next to a person who is wicked that's ready to be spoiled. You may not know this. You may not know what these people's lives have gone through into their entire lives in order for them to get wealth and riches. But you do know that when judgment hits, they will be spoiled. So you should be resting in that comfort of not ever having to worry about what will befall you in these end times, because you know the Most High is going to look out for you. That this world, because it's in the days of sinners, look how much these sinners have amassed in wealth and abundance and resources. They are fit to be destroyed, and that is how their correction are going to come. Some of the wicked who have amassed all this wealth, they will turn to Yah once they lose it all, once they go through judgment, once they go through correction. And I'm pretty sure there's a couple of stories out there where people who lose all their money and they end up finding Yah through this tragedy. I'm pretty sure we can't be the only ones that, because we don't have the wealth that the wicked person has, that they won't be able to turn from their wicked ways. It would just have to show up in different ways. Just like in scripture, like the Pharaoh knew exactly who Yah was through his house being destroyed and getting hit with plagues. He had to lose a lot. He had to be humbled in order for him to know who Yah is. Nebuchadnezzar went through the same thing. He had to be stripped of his humanity to go into the wilderness to eat like an animal for him to understand who was actually in power. So in order for Abraham to know exactly who's in power, he told Abraham, all this land I'm going to give you into your generations forever. So he's in the front of a man that wants his wife. And this man is telling him, look, I'll give you all this land that you see for your woman. And him knowing that he's already given me this. He's just showing me how he's given it to me. He's showing me that his words are true. He's showing me that he's correct. He's showing me that I'm going to be given this land. And I don't have to do nothing but be faithful and trusting in him. This is the trial of going through this. After the first trial, he should be like, okay, I'm getting men servant, maid servants, rich in gold. Now I'm getting land. Now I'm getting parts of land that are being given to me now on just them trying to take my woman. Now that I understand that they can't take my woman, that my woman is going to be given back to me, I can rest easy to know that I can just pray to Yah. He's going to give me back my woman, and I'm going to get more than what I came in with. And of course, he asked him, like, why, again, Have you done this to us? And Abraham said, because I thought I should suffer death on account of my woman. And Abimelech took flocks and herds and men servants and maidservants and 1,000 pieces of silver, and he gave them to Abraham, and he returned Sarah to him. And Abimelech said to Abraham, behold, the whole land is before you. Dwell in it wherever you shall choose. And Abraham and Sarah, his woman, went forth from the king's presence with honor and respect. And he dwelt in the land of even in Gerar. And all the inhabitants of the land of the Philistines and the king's servants were still in pain through the plague which the angel had inflicted upon them the whole night on account of Sarah. And then the king came to Abraham and said, please do your servant and your servants some good and pray for us that the plague may be lifted. And Abraham prayed to Yah and the plague was lifted. This is how Yah shows himself through the righteous and shows himself through the wicked. Now, Abimelech would have not known who Yah was if this situation didn't happen to him, if he never had Sarah in front of his face or Abraham came to him. Abraham and Sarah would not have known the true power of the Most High if they didn't go through this situation and didn't go through this trial. I said this before, you are put in situations so you can be exalted or put in situations for you to be humbled. That all depends on how you are walking this walk. But the Most High has said, I have rather exalt you and bless you rather than destroy you. I have no pleasure in destroying you. It would show Yah that he was more harsher than he is merciful. And he loves to show his mercy and grace for those who are trying to wholeheartedly follow his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments. He asks us to try him on this matter or try him on these matters. That he says by his own words that you can throw back at him that he has sent his word to do exactly what he intended it to do, that it will not return unto him void. The Most High does not issue out empty words, vain threats, or idle threats, just like he doesn't throw out idle blessings. So the trials of Abraham up to the sixth trial were about him trusting in Yah for the one thing he did possess was his woman, the love of his life, and having it returned to her through his faithfulness and his loyalty and also through Sarah's loyalty. So Sarah had been sought after for now 2 kings, and the second one didn't even make her budge. Because she knew that Abraham was called. And sometimes your woman need to see that you are called. That you are blessed. This being a trial for her as well. How can Sarah understand also the power of Yah that this man is chosen to be her covering, chosen to be exalted? How would she know this if she wasn't put in a situation where she herself could have chosen the king of Mizraim or the king of the Philistines? She could have got so haughty-minded and uppity in her ways. She like, damn, 2 kings want me. What am I dealing with Abraham first? He don't have no kingdom. He don't have no army. He doesn't have great buildings. I mean, he got wealth now, but that's only because these kings are giving it to him. She could have got real Jezebel-minded. But she didn't. She saw that this man is covered and blessed by a power I can't understand, but I know he's blessed and covered by a power. I'm going to follow this man. This man got angels fighting for me. This man got angels bringing out plagues because of me. She made the decision she made. So that goes to you too, you women and you men, is to understand the situations you are put in, the trials that you go through, is to either exalt you in your marriage or exalt you in your singleness so you can understand what woman you want or what man you need. That's how we know and understand the calling of those that are supposed to be together. That's important. We go by which is this new generation's, you know, in love with the propaganda of like Love Island, and all of a sudden that they have gone through all these dating shows that they show up on islands and islands with their exes, islands with strangers and so forth. But now all of a sudden people are talking against Love Island, saying it's not about love, it's about lust. Finally, this generation is starting to get it, and they're turning over their ruach into righteousness, and they're trying to seek out their truth. And I guess this is where they're starting at. The foundation of it is Love Island for some reason. But this is what's different between the world and the difference between Yah. It's the difference between scriptures and the difference between being in this Western world where we're taught, like, oh, you want to be friends with the partner. You want to make sure you're compatible, sometimes even by the zodiac. You want to make sure that this person has this background and that background. You got to make sure this person is bringing in this amount of money. All this unnecessary stuff, it just ends up in divorce anyway. But if you are going by the life or the trials of Abraham and Sarah, you are going to be in a marriage or in a covenant with somebody or a ketubah with someone that cannot be shaken and rattled because of the trials and because Yah has chosen to show himself in the righteousness of your doings. You will then rest your faith, your respects, your household in the hands of Yah and Yahusha, and you will not be moved, as David has stated. I'll see y'all next week.